Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, the third issue of the WrestleTalk magazine is now available. Head over to wrestletalk.bigcartel.com for more information. We've got a great issue this month featuring our reviews of the Royal Rumble, Wrestle Kingdom 10 and Raw 25, including the WrestleTalk crew counting down their top 25 moments of Raw history. So head over to wrestletalk.bigcartel.com for more information.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast on this most glorious of Rusev days. I am Ollie Davis and I'm joined by Luke Owen.
Yes, yes, yes. Hello, Swaft Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis, a very sweaty and stinky Oliver Davis. How the devil are you?
I'm doing great because, earth-shattering news, it's time for the egg spoon.
Oh, wow, we're doing spoons now.
Yeah, we're going straight into... I mean, what else would we start with?
Well, okay, I mean, let's... Every podcast is someone's first podcast.
And, yeah, they're just going to dive into the spoons to catch you up. We are going through every spoon in existence to just appreciate how many different types of spoon there are out there. And I can't think of a better way to kick off this podcast because I'm going to do the joke where, well, not much else has happened, has it?
There has.
Lots of stuff has happened.
Although you had a bonus episode yesterday with the review of Ultimate Deletion. And then today we've got...
Egg spoons.
Egg spoons and lots of Daniel Bryan chat.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about egg spoon first?
Yeah, so this is mainly used for eating boiled eggs. The spoon has a shorter handle and a bit of a bowl on the actual... I don't know. Well, the whole thing's the spoon part, I suppose.
Yes.
The head part of the spoon.
Uh-huh.
That's a bit more bowl-like with a pointed tip. And often a more rounded bowl than a teaspoon. These, of course, are to puncture the egg, to smash the top of the soft-boiled egg, so you can scoop out the innards and probably dip in some little toasty soldiers.
I was going to say, are you a hard or soft man?
I'm a soft man.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have a boiled egg.
I love eggs. They're probably my most favourite. I have. This might be... Some people might be like... Okay, wow, he really likes eggs. Other people are going to be outraged and start saying, you have too many eggs, it's going to be a health problem. I have 3 eggs a day, at least.
Whoa, a day? Yes. Man, that's like Yokozuna used to have, like, I think he used to have 12 eggs a day.
Mm.
So you are
a quarter.
You are a quarter of, is that a quarter?
I'm a Yoko quarter. It's a quarter.
Yeah, it's a quarter. You eat a quarter of what Yokozuna consumed. Mm. Yokozuna was a large man.
Yes, but Bret Hart always said he was one of his favourite people to wrestle because he moved around like a blanket. Like he was really, really light and, just
billowy.
The way he carried himself. Yeah. So, 3 eggs.
Yeah.
I mean, I was having 2, but then all the sort of food guidelines were like, we've given eggs a bad rap over the years because it's not dangerous in the slightest. It lowers it raises the good kind of cholesterol. Both types of cholesterol were lumped in as one bad thing, but actually, that's you need cholesterol to do everything.
Well, how do you take your eggs in the morning?
Well, the easiest way, and for speed, from Monday to Friday, I'm a scrambled egg man. But oh boy, at the weekend, I go to town.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking poached eggs, pretty much. Just depressed. They're hard. They're hard to do.
Oh, I'm pretty wicked at a poached egg.
Are you?
Yeah. My dad taught me like a... Well, because you can't cook anything.
Yes.
Yeah. My dad taught me a good technique for poached eggs.
Just the vinegar trick.
Yes, and creating the whirlpool and things like that. So poached eggs are my choice as well. That's how I like my eggs.
So good.
And when I was very hungover on Sunday, because I had one too many dances at my friend's wedding, the cooked breakfast that I got in the morning, it was the eggs that actually did me in.
Oh, really?
That was the
bit too far?
Yeah, I think that was almost the bit too far. I was like... The bacon, I think, was fine. The beans were certainly fine. The toast was great.
Yeah, you got to absorb the dances.
But as soon as I had a little bit of egg, that was game over, man. And I couldn't really touch...
Did you have that last?
Well, no.
Do you not think it was the cumulative effect?
No, because I was having bits and pieces. Like, right. I don't eat my breakfast individually. I eat my breakfast all in one go.
That's what I used to be like as a kid. I was very particular. My mum was very afraid that I had some form of condition. And I would eat each part of my dinner and then move on to the next part.
I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with that. Like my wife doesn't particularly do that, but she does like to save certain bits for the end.
Oh, yeah. You've got to save the best mouthful.
I think that's very much a smart move. But she, I don't know if I've ever told you about this, she doesn't like beans on her plate. She doesn't like beans touching things.
What? But that's what they're there for. The beautiful beanie sauce.
Making everything a little bit soft.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, and for dipping. Well, when she stayed at my, back at my parents' house, I suppose, and I made her a cooked breakfast in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And like, I have beans, just scoop them everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Try and make them a little pile, but just get out of everywhere. And I went to do that. She literally leapt across the kitchen going like, whoa! And then she created like a little reservoir, like using sausages as a blocker. For the beans to go in because
it's good structurally sound.
Doesn't want them touching eggs, doesn't want them touching this before she was vegan, obviously. She doesn't want them touching anything else that's on the plate. Because, in her words, I want it to be my choice.
Wow. That is a weird level of control.
It's the same thing with gravy. It's why she doesn't like gravy that much. Because gravy just gets everywhere. And she wants to. She once told me that her ideal way of having gravy is in a spritz can. So you can just like
spray
do it. Yeah, you can just do like a little dusting good gravy. She just wants to do like a little dusting of gravy as opposed to just like me, just lashings of gravy over everything. I once, when I was in my mid-20s, used to plan my meals around gravy. Basically, it was like, well, what can I have with gravy today? Because I bloody love gravy.
And a can of Stella, if these stories in the podcast later are to be believed. You opened up a new... I think you've mentioned this in passing before, but maybe never so... With such a definitive example. I'm shocked that you used to be this person.
I know. Yeah, it was a very different side of me. I was...
age are we talking? 20 to...
19 through to about 22, maybe 23.
When John Cena was on top. So do you think that was the driver?
It was the anger of John Cena being on top. Just maybe
06 to 09.
Well, no, 2019. So that's 2004.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 2004 was when I was 19. So yeah, it was basically like my later uni years, and then when you sort of get out of university and you think that you know everything, and you think you're the bee's knees because you've got a degree, got a 2-2 in proper Mickey Mouse degree,
nice.
That you just think that you're a bit art. So yeah, I used to get into scraps and I used to think that I was a hard nut, but I really wasn't. So I used to get punched a lot, really.
Wow.
Yeah, there were dark days. Dark days. Yeah, I'm not overly proud of them, in all honesty. I'm hoping that when I talk about this on the podcast, it doesn't come across like a braggart thing.
No.
I mean, imagine everyone's going to comment like, "I can't believe how you would get into a fight because look at you, like look at the size of you. You're a very thin man." But this is why I never won fights. It's very, very important to clarify. I never won them.
So we've got some correspondence here.
So this first one from Spiv Mayer. Probably not his actual name.
Spiv Major?
No, I'd have said it was Spiv Mayer, to be honest. But this is in regards to getting back into wrestling. Hello, Luke and Ollie. My path back to wrestling has been Morpheus along by WrestleTalk. I'm a huge fan of the YouTube channel and every Wrestle Ramble podcast. I went dark on WWE and WCW 1998. I was only 13 or so. I love Bret Hart, Razor Ramon, Mankind, Scotty Too Hotty, New Age Outlaws, Rock the Dwayne Johnson, and the greatest of all time of whoop-ass himself, Steve Austin. Nothing was more amazing than to see Stone Cord do that waddle of a walk down the ramp to hand out stunners to Vinnie Mac and anything like Oprah hands out cars to write off on taxes. You get a stunner and you get a stunner. Everyone gets a stunner. The 90s were such a better time, but I digress. From Stone Cold chugging beers in 98 until WrestleMania 31, I hadn't seen, heard, looked for, or paid attention to anything wrestling. Over the years, I grew up, started work, and became a dad. My son came running home from school one day, asking me with nothing less than pure excitement in his eyes, "Dad, what's WrestleMania?" He and I had been into MMA and UFC, and a kid in his class told him of Brock Lesnar fighting Roman Reigns. Like I said, was on the dark of WWE and wrestling in general. But I told him what I knew and remembered and decided to have a bonding afternoon of both our first time seeing a WrestleMania. I grew up poor and was never had the ability to order the pay-per-views. I figured, hey, I'm a dad now. I'm in charge of the cash flow. I'm ordering the darn pay-per-view. Best decision ever. That afternoon of watching my son's face light up on fire when Seth Rollins caught one of the top two RKOs of all time, and it ain't number two, and Brock and Roman, the nostalgia I caught with Sting versus Triple H, it got me. I jumped back in headfirst with my son. We even discovered that a personal friend of mine is literally Jimmy and Jay is his little brother. I had gotten to the point where my work schedule had me following WWE through the YouTube highlight clips, and after a week of watching it that way, WrestleTalk popped up in my suggestions. Yay for me.
Come on, algorithms.
I had always and only knew WWE. I have found New Japan through the suggestion of this channel. I have learned of ROH because of this channel. My path to a world of wrestling I never knew existed has been ushered by Ollie and Luke, and for that, I'm going to support WrestleTalk. Wow, great email there.
That is fantastic. And that's if that's what you grew up on, and weirdly the way he singles out Scotty Too Hotty and all the, you know, Bret Hart, Razor Ramon, the all-time greats, Mankind, Rock, and Scotty Too Hotty. And I love Scotty Too Hotty, but sort of stood out a bit there. And so if you grew up on that in the 90s, and then you watch WrestleMania 31 with that Sting Triple H match, it's like, hey, come back in.
That's what it was designed to do.
Yeah. So that was, what a wonderful coincidence. And if you've got the UFC connection as well with Brock.
And you have that ending as well with Seth cashing in Money in the Bank. What a great Mania that was.
It was very good. Oh, that's really nice. I'm glad we could help you open up your wrestling world.
Yes.
But
I wonder if his son has stuck around.
Oh, yeah. Because let us know.
Yeah.
Spiv Major.
I think he's sort of Spiv Major. I think he sort of does say that his son has, but it's never clarified. I wonder who his son's favourite wrestler, or who his favourite wrestler is now.
Wonder Ollie. Should we get on with the show? I walked in this morning into the studio. We haven't spoken a great deal since the announcement last night and SmackDown last night. And I was a beam with smiles. I feel so excited and happy.
Your exact words were, "I am filled with childlike glee." And I turned to you and I said, "I feel the exact same thing." Boy, howdy, was like last night, I was playing Dungeons and Dragons with my friends. I nearly stopped the game. I nearly said, like, guys,
that's how big this was.
I was like, guys, we need to stop this. Yeah. A, because I thought I might need to make a video because I knew you were at CrossFit. So I was like, guys, we may need to stop here. Also,
I do CrossFit. That's just to point that out.
Yeah, I was like, I may need to do something here. Also, this is just almost too exciting. And then this morning when I was watching SmackDown Live, man, I was just got a bit emotional. Yes. I got a bit of a tear in my eye during the video at the start.
I didn't cry.
No,
not at all. Not one bit at all.
Because there was a very emotional video package at the start, which was like showing his accomplishments, but also tinged with the sadness of his retirement. Mm. And then he came out and he was able to cut that promo. And I described it in the SmackDown review. It's that rare promo in WWE where the guys just get to be themselves and they just get to talk from the heart about how much this sport means to them and how this wacky world of professional wrestling, what it means to their lives and it means to them as a person, and like thanking the fans and thanking Brie. He was getting choked up. He was getting teary-eyed.
Every time you mentioned Brie, there was a...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What a beautiful and emotional return. And then a killer angle at the end of the show.
Yes.
Including, I know we should go through this in order, but I just want to talk about those running drop kicks, because when he was throwing those running drop kicks, I know, because we've briefly spoken about this, you wanted to watch them again because you had that moment that, like, I remember.
Well, that's run down, because some people don't actually watch SmackDown. They watch just us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it opened with a video package. This was the start of SmackDown. Daniel Bryan's return had been announced previously in the day by WWE.com.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, I got a lot of flack yesterday for being too negative. I'm doing big air quotes on the Ultimate Deletion thing. The first load of comments I saw on WWE's announcement of it was like, oh, and that's not on social media. When you do it on TV? Like, that to me is being... That's nitpicking negativity.
Well, that is... if that's your initial response to Daniel Bryan being
cleared... That's what I mean! Like, that's being negative.
That's very cynical, but... I do empathize a lot with that viewpoint, because this would have been an amazing moment if it just happened and unfolded before our eyes, or it was at least set up and teased on TV rather than just here's the announcement. It's like they did the same with Kurt Angle's return. It was just, oh yeah, he's going into the Hall of Fame several hours before Raw. It is a recent trend in WWE, and I get it. They want to, this episode of SmackDown will presumably do very well in the ratings.
That's right
to WrestleMania, it's going to be up there with Raw. But, you know, that has come at the expense of a moment that we could all find out at the same time.
But I don't think we did sort of all find out at the same time. And even if it was just announced on TV,
everyone, when he came down to the ring, everyone was chanting yes.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Because we all knew,
right? But if we'd have watched it on TV... We all wouldn't have known at the same time, because some people watch on a tape delay, some people watch it the following day.
But the vast majority watch it on first broadcast.
Yeah, but the vast majority would have seen it announced on social media. So we all got to find out together.
Okay, it's not the fact of when people find out. It's that you can use this within a story. It could be part of an angle. It could be a moment. Not a moment shared by everyone when they look at their phone. It will be a moment within wrestling continuity.
But I think we got that moment anyway, because we got to have this promo, and you wouldn't have been able to have this promo without the announcements, without the Daniel Bryan is medically cleared. And it is very much a business thing. WWE are negotiating their new TV deal at the moment, so they need ratings bumps to be able to show to other, like Fox, you know, in particular, to say, like, hey, look, these are the ratings we're currently getting. With your wider reach, we can get even more eyeballs on this product. So you kind of do need to get these rating bumps in there. I thought it was a really a smart thing to do, and it didn't bother me that it didn't happen on TV. And as someone said to me this morning on Twitter, like, well, why didn't you just, like, you could have done the beatdown and then revealed next week that he's in the ring. And my argument was like, but if he got beat down, then I know he's medically cleared. Because as soon as you touch Daniel Bryan, as soon as you lay him out somewhere, you know that he's medically cleared to wrestle again.
Well, you don't do it then. You build up the sort of Bryan, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn confrontation throughout the night, and they're going back and forth, and then Bryan maybe goes, well, you know, you're going to have this at WrestleMania because I'm medically cleared to return to the ring. Huge moment. Then he runs wild on both of them, and that's how SmackDown goes off the air. Huge cliffhanger. I'm a big fan of cliffhangers. Mm-hmm. I need to tune in next week now. That, to me, you get the moment, you get the huge bump on ratings that would happen the next week because people will tune in to find out. I don't want to sound down on this because I'm enormously happy Bryan's been cleared to return, but I am down on the fact that it came in a website post.
No, I can see both sides of the arguments, but I really didn't mind the fact that it was announced online beforehand. It's a digital age. You know, people don't find things out on TV anymore.
I don't like find out Walking Dead spoilers on before they don't announce, oh yeah, so-and-so got his head bashed in by Negan. You better tune in for that tonight. Yeah. No, it's built and it happens as you watch it on
as
TV.
I said, I can see both sides of the arguments, but I do think that this was a perfectly fine way to do it. And it this got me more excited to watch SmackDown live than I have been in, you know, a couple of, you know, I know I was excited to watch it last week because of the stuff that came out of Fastlane, but this, like, I woke up this morning full of glee waiting to watch SmackDown live. And yeah, maybe I could have had that next week as well, but I've still got that next week as well anyway, because I want to see where this storyline is going from there. I think it works both ways.
I just remember the days when I was obsessed with Lost and I could only watch it week to week. And the chats I would have with my friends, you know, what's this mean? What's going to happen next week? That would last from the Wednesday evening to the next Wednesday evening. I don't know why you can't make that the same with wrestling.
But it is the same way with wrestling. Like, what's going to happen next week? We're having a discussion about what could happen next week. We're literally having the discussion you just talked about.
In stuff that happens in the show, not stuff that's announced outside the show. I think this could have been this was a great cliffhanger moment, and they made it the opposite of a cliffhanger moment. It was like the prologue.
Well, we got a different cliffhanger moment at the end of the show,
which I think you could have done next week. I'm not going to be any more down on
it. We're only 3 weeks out to WrestleMania. We've got to try and, like, this is a feud that has now got to try and condense a lot of story into just these 3 weeks, because we've been building it for months, but this factor of it, of him being medically cleared, has only just happened now. So we've got to try and cram a lot of this in now in the 3 weeks. So you've got to try and fast forward through some of it, I guess.
Anyway, so SmackDown opens with the video package.
It's like the best week ever and we're arguing.
Yeah, I know. We haven't agreed on anything. But we both love the fact that it's happened. And did you see all the tweets? You know, there were loads of tweets.
Yep.
Congratulations, Daniel Bryan. Did you see a little Coldaholic in there?
I saw Kenny as well.
Oh, I didn't see
Kenny. Yeah, I saw Kenny and Coldaholic in
there. Well, we. Come on, guys. Come Paul on. Heyman's our bestie now. Knucklehead. And then, like, Bryan gets this huge reaction from the crowd. The commentators are standing when he comes out. And that's when Bryan has a wonderful moment where he says, I've got to talk about, you know, Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens, and Sami Zayn. And I actually thought for a moment, oh my God, he is. He's just going to do that. And that they're like treating it like it's nothing. But then I was swerved. I was worked. He said, well, you know, they're not here yet, so let's talk about something else. And of course he was talking about him being medically cleared. And like you said, just what a promo.
Exactly. Well, this for me, this was a moment. This was the moment that I'd wanted to see, was him just cutting this passionate, heartfelt. This wasn't storyline nonsense. This wasn't a work. This wasn't WWE scripted lark. This was just him talking about what this means to him. And I felt that was such a great moment. Because, like I mentioned in the SmackDown review, him retiring was a dark day for wrestling
sad.
Fans. It was so sad. Like, I was in tears watching that as well, because this was a guy that we've loved on the independent scene. We celebrated when he finally made it to WWE, and then we complained because he wasn't getting pushed and because he was getting buried.
9 second matches
and all this
rumble.
Yeah, all this stupid stuff. And then, against all odds, he was in the main event of WrestleMania 30 against the Vince McMahon handpicked Randy Orton and Batista. It was the Vince McMahon handpicked guys versus our guy. Mm. We haven't had a Daniel Bryan since, despite what they might want to try and do with some people, Roman Reigns. We haven't had our Bryan since, and we may never get a Bryan again. It was so great to see him back, and just like, and you could tell that it really meant a lot to him. I loved this as a moment.
And he was sort of teasing, well, you know, I will wrestle in a WWE ring again. And then the amount of jokes we make about people pointing to the WrestleMania sign, and the whole crowd are just like, but what about that thing over there? And they're all pointing in unison, like everyone's doing their best Ronda Rousey impression. And I just thought, I don't mind this point.
No.
And of all the points, this is great.
And chanting WrestleMania.
Yes!
Like, it was so great.
It doesn't even fit into the syllables of the chant they were doing. Like, WrestleMania.
Well,
I guess it kind of
sort
does.
Sort of does.
It
fits
does.
Just about.
I've
literally written, this crowd is incredible. Mm. Like, this crowd was so, so hot for this.
Yes.
And it was so awesome.
And it led throughout the rest of the night. They were a very good crowd. I mean, they had reason to. And Bryan leads a yes chant at the end. Just, you know, that's an all-time great WWE moment right there. Just like how his retirement speech was a great WWE moment in the sort of more memorable way. I don't mean the content of it, but it was a very emotive moment. This will go down as, you know, one of the all-time bits. And someone pointed out on Reddit, I can't remember who it was, that isn't it interesting that Daniel Bryan was trained by Shawn Michaels, and Shawn Michaels went through a very similar arc in that he was on top of WWE for a period, against the odds of being a small man, working his way up to the top, and then he was out with injury for a couple of years. And when he came back, he was even better.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's the thing, though. I suppose the question is, are we getting part-time Daniel Bryan? Are we just getting him for, like, your SummerSlams, your Survivor Series? That Kurt Angle role, I suppose, where we just get him for the big four and occasional other pay-per-views. Or are we getting you know, an almost full-time Brian, where he is wrestling not every week, but almost, you know, wrestling like Shinsuke Nakamura schedules, where you're wrestling every three or four episodes of SmackDown Live. Are we getting him as an active member of the roster?
I want him, I think, well, I want him to be on every episode of everything.
Of everything,
but of SmackDown, all the pay-per-views, so he's a consistent weekly character. I don't know how they're going to reconcile his general manager role. I said commissioner on the breaking news video.
Oh,
that was annoying, but they did it all in one take.
It's like you said, it's like you said Battlefield in the video yesterday.
I was thinking of that song. On the battlefield.
Battlefield. Oh, I don't know that song
in
years.
Great song.
That's a bit of a change.
Baby,
that.
Don't bring your armor. Or something to that effect. And
so you better go get your armor. That's it.
That's the
one.
And what was I talking about?
Battlefield, Battleground, Commissioner.
They're going to reconcile.
Yeah, that's it.
So
walk yourself backwards.
I think he shouldn't do house shows. Mm. Maybe the occasional one, you know, just to sort of err on the side of caution.
Bump ticket sales.
Yeah, and hopefully protect him more. Although, you know, by all accounts, he's very, very healthy. So Dave Meltzer said, look, he has been tested more than any wrestler or fighter in history.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if anyone, maybe other members of the roster, if they underwent that same testing, they would not be cleared. So it's interesting.
Kurt Angle.
The whole concussions thing, yeah. So I would like to see him, and then, you know, maybe in 5 years' time, then he can go to a part-time status.
Where he's
only back for the big ones. So talking of what his next match is going to be, they teased a Dolph Ziggler match, Luke. That's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's a match.
Talk about, you know, Dolph Ziggler nearly left. And, you know, that thank God they stayed together so they could...
I mean, talk about taking the hottest act on SmackDown to put against Daniel Bryan as a potential first feud. Poof! Mm. I mean, there's no one on fire more than Dolph Ziggler right now.
Momentum. That's what we're talking about
it's
here.
All the momentum.
Yeah, you combine the momentum, that of the... of the force that just seems to stop anything in its tracks, that is Dolph Ziggler. We like Dolph Ziggler, of course, but he's been booked terribly.
Yeah, it's not his fault.
But they had a moment backstage where Brian was walking and Ziggler comes up and says, congratulations, I can't wait to beat you. And Brian's like, I want to see you try. I'm looking forward to a lot more bits like this in coming weeks.
Yeah.
Because that eventual stare down with Nakamura or AJ Styles, or the next time the two general managers of their respective brands meet... My personal dream match, although it's probably way past its sell-by date, Kurt Angle versus Daniel Bryan. Kurt Angle and Daniel Bryan, now both active wrestlers.
Yeah, I mean, it was at this point here where and he was facing off against Dolph Ziggler that I was like, man, this may be more than just a big four. Like, because, I mean, Dolph Ziggler versus Daniel Bryan isn't exactly a SummerSlam main event. Well, not really, not because Dolph Ziggler hasn't got any momentum behind him. You could try and fudge some, I suppose. But it was when I was like, man, that really does feel like a B-level, like a B-show feud.
It's a great backlash match.
That's a great backlash match. Absolutely. It's a perfect backlash match.
You know what's going to happen at Backlash, though. It's going to be the tag match pair. So it'll be like Bryan versus Zayn, Owens versus McMahon.
I could go for that.
Yeah, and then this all built up to the episode's main event, which was like Bryan's waiting around for Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens to turn up. And the producer finally says, hey, they're here. And Brian's up, we'll do this in the ring. Brian comes down, everyone's chanting yes. And then Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn come down. They are ridiculously happy.
So happy.
And they were like, we weren't even going to come because Shane isn't here to beat up. So we just wanted to come and congratulate you.
Yeah, they actually worked in a storyline reason for them being late.
Yes.
Because there's no excuse for you being late for work. But they came in and just like, hey, we weren't going to show up today because Shane McMahon's not an issue anymore. But when we heard the news, we got the text alert like everyone else. So we had to make our way in. I was like, oh, that's a really clever storyline way of you kayfabing the reason why you weren't backstage at the start of the show. So allowing Daniel to have that promo right at the start. Nice little touch.
I think that as much as I love this segment, though, and the performances from everyone involved
were
on fire.
Oh, man.
They, like, everyone's acting was on point. However, I do think that's where the kayfabe logic ended, because they played out the narrative of Brian being like, look, I love you guys. we all grew up, like, started in the business together, and but you've beaten up your boss, you've gone too far, I'm gonna have to fire you. And then Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens were sad about that, and they shook their hands respectfully, but then they beat him down. So I just, with the last 20 years of SmackDown main event storyline in mind, you know, last 5 months, that didn't make sense to me. Maybe you can explain it.
Why he fired them?
Well, no, I can see why they fired them, but why was Brian being regretful? Why were they sort of behaving like they were all in cahoots? You know, like, hey, I've always had your back.
I've always read the story is in that they were never in cahoots, but because Brian thinks that, and he said it in this promo, I think you're two of the best wrestlers in this entire company. You're certainly on the SmackDown brand. And I don't want to lose you guys. So although they've got the infighting with Shane McMahon, he's trying to play off both sides because he needs to play off his general manager role. But also, he's like, well, I want to keep these guys here because they're good for business, I suppose. They're good for the brand. So that was always my reading on the storyline. He was never in cahoots. He didn't like Shane McMahon screwing with them, but he didn't like them screwing with Shane McMahon either. He was just trying to play peacekeeper. Mm. And that was all sort of, you know, fine and dandy. And then it was last week they took it too far because it was like, look, Shane gave you what you wanted. He gave you a match at WrestleMania. 10 years ago, we were in a bingo hall in front of 100 people. If someone had said to you, you're going to get a singles match at WrestleMania, we would have jumped at the opportunity. But you didn't jump at the opportunity. You just attacked your boss instead. And that's not cool. Like, that's not how we as wrestlers kind of conduct ourselves, and that's why I have to fire you.
It didn't resonate with me because you know what Brian's doing there is so, and it's like Brian's obviously the babyface, but the regretful firing should be that the people he's regretfully firing should be like babyfaces who have overstepped their bounds. Based on the severity of what happened last week with Shane, I don't know why he was so sad about...
They're friends. They're friends. Lifelong friends. It's, you know, working together for 15
also
years.
Also sociopaths, well, you know, from the last 5 months. It's like they have been awful human beings. But, you know, everyone performed it well. I just thought that the content was a bit
That's
off.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Then we had the bit, finally, 20 minutes in, the bit you wanted to talk about right at the start.
Yep. So they obviously shake their hands, and as you might predict, they then attack Daniel Bryan. And this was almost like, it's the first time we're really seeing Bryan taking these bumps.
My heart was in my mouth.
It was like when Bret Hart came back in 2010 or whatever. Yeah, in 2010. And he was doing his awful feud with Vince McMahon that led to that dreadful WrestleMania match. And There was a segment that he did on Raw at the main event where he was like pulling cables out of the things. He was like destroying the Raw set and things like that. And he pulled these cables out and he fell over. And I was like, oh, because you don't want to see Brett takes a stumble, like his chance that he's going to have another concussion or, you know, have something worse happen to him. So like I remember having that feeling. But for some reason, as soon as Brian took the beat down and as soon as he started throwing those drop kicks, all of my worries went away. And I was like, this man is back. This is the Daniel Bryan that I've been wanting to see for the last 2 years. And I loved it. It was weird because I should have felt like you did. Mm. That sense of worry. And I'm like, oh my God, don't be careful.
I'm a warrior.
I get that. And I don't think you're wrong to be so. I was like, I should have felt like this too, but I was super excited.
So excited.
And I had this beaming smile on my face when he was just throwing those running drop kicks there. Like, he's so good at
full
doing...
They did not half-ass this. It wasn't like, oh man, we're going to like ease you in. It was, no, we're going to have you take a pop-up powerbomb on the... Because when they were outside near the end after Brian made his comeback, I thought, oh, okay, the announcer's table's okay, I guess, because it's actually quite a soft landing. Maybe they've even put some cushions in there for Brian.
Like a Shane McMahon cushion.
Yeah, no, not the apron. Don't put him on the apron. And then they powerbombed him on the apron, which is set up to be this really devastating move. It's ridden a lot of people out of TV. Yeah, they went for it.
Yeah, this really was like a not half-assing this return into in-ring action. And I absolutely... effing loved every second of it.
Yeah, that Brian comeback with we got the full-on drop kicks in the corner where he was effectively flipping over.
And the way he fires up as well. I forgot how great he is at firing up. This was
so good.
The
German suplex as well. Yeah. The yes kicks. Oh,
this was awesome.
But actually, well, I just remember one more thing. As great as Brian was, and he was, good grief, Kevin Owens.
Yeah, I mean, the pair of them, I think that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn was, but you're right, Kevin Owens in particular, but I thought Sami, I don't want to take anything away from how good Sami was. But the way he was screaming, it was this guttural, visceral scream, and it was just like, you make me do this. Why are you making me do this? The way that Sami, the look on their faces was just this perfect conflicting of, I don't want to be doing this, but I have to do this. I have to make my point. It was just amazing performances from all three guys. And it's all my notes are at the end of it. It was just like, this is so good. Everyone is playing their part perfectly. I love conflicted Sami Zayn. He's one of my favorite characters in WWE. He has this amazing ability to flip the switch from being like this goofy, doing this wacky dancing, his exaggerated dancing, doing his yep movement stuff, to then being like, no, I'm unhinged and I have to attack you now. It's fascinating to watch.
I mean, I didn't really notice Sami. I was just transfixed on Brian and Owens. And the great thing about those Owens, like, screams of, and it goes back to Battlefield, Battleground 2016, you know, when he's with Sami, he's like, why are you making me do this? He said the same thing to Shane and Vince last summer.
Yeah.
You know, why are you making me do this to you? And that's, it just works so, like, Kevin Owens knows his character. I'm getting emotional, my cough's coming up. Like, he knows his character so well, and it is, nothing is ever Owens' fault.
No.
It's always someone else's. So even when he's, like, attacking this guy who's just come back from retirement, why have you done this to me?
Yeah, why are you making me attack you?
And it's just, like, this selfish, sociopathic...
This should have been a happy moment.
Yeah, you ruined your moment.
Oh, yeah.
Like, why have you done... No, I just, like, yeah, I... Kevin Owens was incredible, as was everyone.
Yeah. The Wrestle Ramble will be right back after these short messages. This podcast is brought to you in part by Patreon. For just $5 a month, you'll get access to the Wrestle Ramble Extra, a monthly podcast where Ollie and I review shows from wrestling's past. If you pledge now, you'll get our back catalogue of episodes, including Money in the Bank 2011, Armageddon 2000, Wrestle Kingdom 10, and No Way Out 2004, and many others, as well as this month's episode, which will be WrestleMania 25. And $10 plus backers will become part of the Ramble Club, our new show where we talk about wrestling from around the world, including reviews of the Golden Lovers versus Cody and Marty Scurll, Austin Aries versus Eli Drake, and many, many more. All that and so much extra. So head over to patreon.com/wrestletalk for more information.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's a SmackDown review, Maggle, I love it. We got us a flying Uso.
So the rest of SmackDown now, after that initial Daniel Bryan opening promo, we got Nakamura versus Rusev.
Yeah, versus Rusev day. So
a fast lane rematch.
Yeah, Rusev faced AJ Styles last week, and I had that moment last week where I was like, oh, I ended in a non-finish, so maybe they're going to do something with Rusev. Nope, Nakamura just beat him here, clean as a sheet, although there was some really good stuff in this. I really like these two striking each other.
Yeah.
It's really great stuff. Nakamura's great, Rusev's really good as well. Aiden English was awesome on the outside. Did you see the little botch with AJ?
With the United States title.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good work, WWE. Sometimes you just can't get everything right. And
got a lot of graphics to run. It's amazing they don't bill John Cena as the Bludgeon Brothers more.
Yeah, well, I mean, we make mistakes in here all the time, but yes. We only have like 3 graphics that we need to use.
Luke, we're just a one-man team.
We're a one-man team. These mistakes just happen sometimes.
And it's your fault for rushing us to do these.
These bloody Gen Zs, they keep rushing us to do stuff, and the millennials. Mm. So AJ was out there, and I thought it was a decent little match. I thought it got really cool by the end of it. Actually, quite awesome by the end of it. It was a short match, but I enjoyed it.
It was a short match, but these two have good chemistry.
Yeah,
Nakamura and Rusev, and the crowd was so hot after that Bryan promo that, especially the open and exchange, they were into everything. There was a great bit when Nakamura sort of ducked a few punches and then did his come on, and the crowd erupted with that.
And it was really nice to see that. Because there are a few people who don't like Nakamura. Mm. He was the more over of the two.
Yes.
When there were dueling chants, the Nakamura chants were so much louder than the Rusev Day chants. So there's one way to look at that, which is like, yay, good, because your WWE Championship contender is more over than someone who isn't. But at the same time, you're like, oh, you remember when you had that really hot act in Rusev Day, but yes, because you keep booking him into the ground, people are now starting to give up on it? So, yeah, there's 2 ways to look at that.
So, at the end of the match, Nakamura is beaten down by Rusev and English, which is similar to what happened the previous week.
Yes.
Nakamura, so AJ was getting beaten down, but Nakamura made the save. And here, when Nakamura's getting beaten down, AJ's like, ooh, should I step in? Gets his way out of it anyway. So, and Styles is on commentary here. And he's the United States champion.
Yep.
So I guess this is trying to work out that injury.
I think so as well, because he didn't get physical in this at all. I thought it told quite a nice story, though, because the story last week was that AJ was being beaten down. Mm-hmm. Nakamura took his time getting into the ring, sorting his jacket out, making sure that he was right. Then he got into the ring and made the save for AJ Styles. This week, Nakamura's been down. AJ's doing the same thing. I'm just going to slowly take off my jacket. I'm just going to take off my title belt. Could you hold that, please, Corey? By the time he'd done all that, Nakamura was like, no, I'm all right, mate. Yeah. I've sorted this out on my own. It's only Rusev and Aiden English. Because then he can do the posing to AJ Styles, because it's AJ being like, oh, okay, yeah. Mm. Right, well, I'll see you at WrestleMania then, I guess. And then you had that wonderful segment with them backstage. I didn't cover this in my SmackDown review because I couldn't really find a way to kind of fit it in the bigger narrative. Plus, I had all the Daniel Bryan stuff to talk about. I've only got 4 minutes. And I'm a one-man team. And he's backstage, and Nakamura was like, oh, by the way, I didn't need your help.
Mm.
And he goes, oh, in a WrestleMania? And AJ's like, oh, I know, you're going to beat me at WrestleMania. And Nakamura, quick as a flash, was like, have more confidence in yourself.
Yeah, it was good.
So good.
Also, backstage angle after this, we had Asuka and Charlotte video package. And Charlotte was watching this video package like a normal human being.
Sometimes on SmackDown, people just watch things like regular humans. I think it depends on who's producing that particular segment, but sometimes they get it right.
And Natalia comes in to say, you know, she could beat Asuka. And that sets up a Natalia-Charlotte match for later on.
Yep.
Baron Corbin beat Ty Dillinger in a very short match. But I like both men. I thought they did. I thought everyone, the wrestling on the show, was pretty much non-existent apart from the women's match. The singles women's match. And
yeah, be specific with that one.
Yeah, and the but everyone did well with the time they were given.
Yeah, I said this in my SmackDown review, and not to kind of give away any immediate thoughts on the show, but even without all the Daniel Bryan stuff, I thought this was actually a really solid episode of SmackDown. You're right, like, people didn't have a lot of time, but they maximised their minutes. And I thought Ty Dillinger and Baron Corbin really maximised their minutes here, with the exception of the botch on the end of days at the end of it.
They covered well, though.
They covered well. Yeah. They just redid the spot, and away you go.
Yeah.
And plus, we've got a wild Ty spotting on the show. So,
yeah, you know, it's nice to see he's still employed.
Exactly. You know, sometimes you've got to take them when you get them.
It is that time of the year. You know, there are a few NXT releases earlier in the month. WrestleMania, always you get a Black Friday of future endeavors.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think Ty's safe. Mike Kanellis. And all, but he has got the sort of rehab issues. So
exactly, yeah.
They'll keep him.
I mean, Ty's been there for, I think, 35 years, so I think he'll be fine at this point.
Next up, we had Natalia beating Charlotte in the best match on the show.
Yeah.
Because no one else got any time, really. I really like this match.
Yeah.
It was very good.
I thought it was a little bit slow and sloppy at the start, but they've really found their groove, because these two have worked together, excuse me, a lot, and I think they work together really well. And yeah, they told a really good story in this sort of counter reversal submissions and all that sort of stuff. I actually really enjoyed it. And then we got the big moment at the end.
Well, in the match, particularly the end sequence, there was a, you know, from the spinning power bomb from Natalia, and then there was like a brutal spear from Charlotte on the outside. And then they're in the figure four, and Natalia's slapping Charlotte. That was over the ring apron, superplex. And I was like, this is a good match. And then Carmella attempted a cash in. And I was like, oh, this could have been a good match, but, you know, fine. They'd save it for a pay-per-view. This is fine for a TV match. Carmella runs in. She does like hand over the briefcase, but the bell's never rung. She turns around. Charlotte knocks her out. Natalia gets the distraction pin.
Yeah, we've seen the Carmella run-in attempt to cash in almost three or four times now. They've done it the exact same way every single time. And it's starting to get a little bit, not, I don't want to say old and tiresome, but it pretty much just confirms to me that Carmella's cashing it in at WrestleMania, on the Raw after WrestleMania, on Alexa Bliss or Nia Jax.
That's the way round it.
Yeah,
you're right.
I think she's going to be part of the draft, and she's going to be essentially drafted with the Money in the Bank briefcase, and she's going to cash it in on Raw rather than SmackDown.
Or she turns up at an indie show and cashes it in for James Ellsworth
intergender
title.
Oh, that'd be great.
That would be poetic
I
symmetry.
Listened to Ellsworth on Jericho's podcast. I'm quite late to the party on that one because it was a couple of months ago.
Yeah, that was ages ago.
But it was a really great interview. James Ellsworth comes off so well.
He's a
really nice guy.
Yeah, because I was going to say, look, I cannot see that SmackDown title going anywhere, because Asuka's going to beat Charlotte. She'll have to.
Mm-hmm.
It's a streak. But then Asuka can't lose her streak to a Carmella cash-in. So how... That means Carmella's losing her Money in the Bank cash-in. So, yeah, the way round that would be to draft it to Raw.
I don't think you'd want the first women's Money in the Bank holder to cash in and not win, because you want to get that over as a way to win the belt. But,
You'd also thought you want the first women's Money in the Bank winner to be a woman.
Well, not...
And not to name the women's battle royal after Fabulous Moolah.
Well, did you not see the 24 episode they did called Empowered, where they essentially just retconned that whole storyline? Where it's like, if you watch that documentary, they did one women's Money in the Bank match, and it was just won by Carmella. They literally spliced together the two finishes to make it look like it's one coherent storyline. And they just talk about, I won it first, I pulled the briefcase down, I'm the first women's Money in the Bank. We only had one of them, and it was me. So, yeah, I think that is official canon now.
Yeah, it's really nice how they can just do that and make these little corporate videos.
Very clever sometimes.
Next up, we had Luke Harper beating Jimmy Uso in, a really fun match for the time they were given.
Yep.
Uso's had a great promo, as always, beforehand.
I've literally written here, F word, they're so good. I love the Usos cutting promos. Like that, I just give them a promo every single week.
That's what they've been doing.
It was so awesome.
And Big E as well. No New Day on the show. But they said, you know, we can beat you at 50%, at 40%, at 30%. They kept on running it down. This is the lockdown. They're just great.
Yeah.
Then the commercial break, you come back and they're straight into the match. Harper is beating Jimmy, isn't it?
It was Jimmy Uso.
Rowan tries to get involved. There was a cool bit where Jimmy used Harper as sort of elevation to kick Rowan off the apron, and then a super kick, but Harper kicked out. And then Harper won with a vicious...
Oh, his discus clothesline.
Discus clothesline, I've
forgotten how awesome of a finisher that is. Which is pretty weird as well, because Natalya used that as just a regular move in the match before, and I would have thought, if your agents have a chat, mate. But the spot when Jey Uso's on the outside, and he super kicks Harper through the ropes. Cameron basically missed it because they were so focused on the Rowan stuff on the other side of the ring. And I kind of love, because it makes it feel very chaotic. So Jey Uso hits a super kick on Harper. He stumbles up, and then Jimmy hits a super kick as well. I genuinely thought that was the finish. I genuinely bought into the fact that this was going to be the Bludgeon Brothers' first loss, and you know, not even as a singles and as a pairing. And it was a great kick out, a really great near fall.
Yeah. So, and but the best bit was after Harper won, like Jimmy's laying there dead. Rowan's in the ring now, and Jey is like, "Oh my god." Quickly drags Jimmy out so the Bludgeon Brothers can't do their usual beatdown stuff.
Yeah.
That was a really nice touch at the end.
It's, I mean, aside from all the Daniel Bryan stuff, this is still my favourite story on SmackDown.
And then we had the opposite, which is the United States title picture.
AJ Styles championship.
Yeah, yeah. Where was he in this? So, and why did Bobby have his belt? So Jinder Mahal comes out.
Randy Orton's the champion.
Oh, wow. That's how little I care about this. Sunil, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sunil's mic didn't work at the start of this intro, introducing Jinder. Jinder says he's the best. Bobby comes out. Randy comes out. Randy beats up a Singh brother.
I did like in that it was Randy Orton setting him up to do the RKO, but then Bobby just jumped in to do the Glorious DDT, and then he was sort of like, you know, getting ready because he knew an RKO was coming, but Randy knew a Glorious DDT was going to come because it was going to be a reversal. It's kind of this nice little Mexican standoff thing, which I liked, but it is the blandest feud on SmackDown Live at the moment. And
the next match is.
Is that a feud?
Is that even a feud?
That's what I mean. Certainly the blandest WrestleMania match. Which is going to lead me to a bit of a question to ask you. Might be a bigger discussion for another time, maybe closer to the time. What do you think is going on the pre-show for Mania?
I have no idea. I think the Women's Royal Rumble is going to main event it.
Oh, the pre-show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the first time.
No. The whole show.
Oh, the whole show.
Yeah. It's the first ever...
History-making.
Battle Royal. I said Women's Royal Rumble. It'll just get the Women's Royal Rumble, they'll just replay it, and it will main event every pay-per-view this year.
I can see this triple threat being on the pre-show, which seems weird because Randy Orton's in it. But
stacked roster.
It's a stacked roster, man, and it's a stacked card.
So next week this setup, Jinder and Sunil versus Bobby Roode and Randy Orton. That is mismatched.
Man, those baby faces really have an advantage there. Such an advantage. Which also means that one of those one of that other team of Sunil and Jinder, one of them's gonna get backdropped onto a table. And I'm gonna put money down that it isn't Jinder.
It's Randy's favourite thing to do. So, we're going to end this very good SmackDown episode on Becky and Naomi beating the Riot Squad.
Yep, man, the Riot Squad suck, don't they? Just complete to be ineffectual. Becky continues to be underappreciated and underutilized, as does Naomi. I'm not even sure Naomi tagged in at any point. She probably did.
She made
the save
at the end.
Yeah, she did her butt thing.
She got a big pop for the bum bump. I've called it the bum bump. Is it called like the rear view?
The rear view, yeah. Because there was a period in time where the commentators almost seemed to be trained to say, she calls it the rear view. So there was a lot of people joking that that's what the finisher was called. she calls it the rear view. And it was a completely nothing match. Yeah. But it's filler stuff because you had the promo with Jinder, Randy and Bobby. So you can't then go into the promo with Daniel Bryan as well. So you need a bit of a filler match in there to kind of... Otherwise, you do have two promo segments.
Can't you just have good stuff all the time?
Remember,
we've had this discussion where you don't need filler stuff.
No, I'm not
bathroom
saying...
bathroom breaks.
I mean, you could have put a good match on.
Yes,
But, you know, you needed to have a match in there and you get 2.5 minutes, I don't even think they got 2.5 minutes.
Yeah,
I think they got like 90.
So quick it was over.
Probably got like 90 seconds or something ridiculous like that. But Becky won, you know, that's what it was.
Haha, it's a Raw review, looking jacked, man.
Now, we've already covered the main event of Raw on, we did a bonus episode on the Ultimate Deletion match yesterday. And, that means we're going to be in the weird position of ending on a video package.
Yeah.
What was the previous thing before that?
I was trying to remember what the previous thing was before as well. I suppose we could talk about what the audience got to see, because we did get to see one of those
bits.
A
little bit.
So we could talk a little bit about that. But
you mean... For podcast listeners, we're just doing slow-mo arm blocks.
Yeah, doing the quite lame-looking arm blocks. Yeah, but we'll come on to that.
So the show kicked off, as it often does these days, with Kurt Angle coming out. And what are you doing?
Yes. He's doing his "you suck" things. He comes out with the microphone.
He does do the weird point.
It's like a bit limp-wristed.
Yeah. Oh, I never noticed that. I will never be able to unsee that now.
Just comes out doing "you suck." It's very cute.
So this is another thing me and you disagree on, because we've already talked about this segment. So Kurt Angle comes out and he says, "I've got some bad news. Roman Reigns is still suspended." Crowd cheer.
Erupting cheers.
But then there he is walking through the crowd, and he hops over the barricade and he gets into the ring, and it got a bit of a pop. And this is where we're going to
disagree. Because I thought this was a very, like, it was a bizarre crowd, because Pavlovian response, perhaps, that Roman Reigns isn't here tonight. Hooray! But then he came out and jumped into the ring, and the crowd popped when they saw him. It was like, oh my god, Roman is here. And he got a babyface cheer when he came out. Then he said his very short badass lines. Each one of those got a babyface pop. Then Brock Lesnar. And then when the authorities came out, he was booed getting arrested. And then he was cheered when he was attacking people. Whereas attacking the authority figures. And then Brock came out. When Brock was beating him down, the crowd were booing Brock for beating down Roman. Now, I will admit, and I will say, there was a small pocket of the crowd that were chanting, "You deserve it." But it's not like that chant caught fire and didn't erupt the entire arena. It was just a very small pocket of the crowd. And so it was really weird, because everyone cheered that he wasn't there, but then popped for him and cheered him like a babyface during all of the things. So that is something we disagreed on. I believe you said the Wrestling Observer Radio disagreed.
Yeah, they also came down on the same line. Yeah,
Which is bizarre. Mm. But it's, you know, maybe it's the feeds that we saw these things through. But it did for me sound like that the crowd were into Roman Reigns. Now, that said, I don't think it was a great angle. I just want to say that now.
Oh, really?
I thought it was fine.
There were good bits. Yeah, so it was like heard.
I thought Ultimate Deletion was the best thing on the show. I know, but people make it sound like I thought it was Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Halloween Havoc, but yeah, I thought it was the best thing on the show. Yes. This was fine as well.
So we both heard the same crowd reactions, because I'm not... They, like I said, Roman did get a pop when he came out. He got a pop when he started to beat up the US Marshals. They booed Brock.
I thought it was US Marshals. That made me chuckle.
But it was never a deafening, unanimous thing. It was just like what you would expect from any angle that WWE are doing. Because, like, the crowd are going to react to what you're showing them, but it's like they're not super invested in it. I didn't think these were, like, even close to being... Not even, like, maybe it was like 20% of the crowd going, yay, because they're seeing a stereotypical babyface angle.
I don't know. I think you take this, do this angle a year ago, people are going to be cheering him getting arrested and booing him when he's beating up the US Marshals and cheering Brock beating him up. Mm. Like, if you did this angle this time last year, that's the reaction you would have gotten.
And now they've just quelled any reaction,
I think that people are reacting. And I said yesterday to a couple of people, they got some of the loudest reactions of the night. So when people tell me that, like, this angle isn't getting over, like, I just disagree, because it is getting over, because it's getting massive reactions from people.
It's not getting massive reactions.
They're reacting.
This is the main event of WrestleMania.
They're reacting more to this.
And it's mostly indifferent.
They're reacting more to this than they are some of the other stuff. They're reacting more to this than they are, say, the Miz.
That's the indictment of the rest of the card, though.
Right, cool. But they're still getting some of the loudest reactions of the show, right?
I would disagree, no. John Cena got the biggest reactions.
Yeah, but he's
eventually.
John Cena. Of course he's going to get the biggest reaction.
Well, this is Brock Lesnar. And Roman Reigns, the top guy you're getting everyone behind. So
I think they got among the loudest reactions of the evening. Mm. And I think that WWE have done the best that they can to try and get the crowd behind Roman. It's never going to work, because the crowd are just not going to buy into Roman. And that's just the state of it. But at least he is still getting reactions, whether positive or negative. He is still getting those reactions. He is still over with the crowd, just not the way he's not over the way Daniel Bryan is over as a babyface, or the way that AJ Styles is, or the way that Braun is over as a babyface.
Do you think Bryan will get added to the to the main event? Come on.
Well, no, because then we'll just have to do this all over again next year, or in 3 years' time.
So. Kurt said, you know, Brock isn't here. Reigns was like, well, I'm going to stay here until he is. Gets out of chair. That's when Kurt sends out the US Marshals. These, you know, upstanding men doing their job. They put him in handcuffs. And He just touches Roman's arm a little bit too much.
Yeah, but he's cool, man. Like, have you ever, like, I mean, this may be a bit sentimental, like, have you ever tried to, like, start on a security guard? Mm. That's what Roman was just like. I was like, don't touch me, mate.
Yeah.
I got thrown out of a gig once for doing that because I was a bit drunk and a bit cocky. Mm. And I was crowd surfed over and the guy grabbed me and I went, oh, thanks, mate. He was like, don't.
Oh, like a... like a sarcastic thanks.
No, not like thanks. Oh. No, I was genuine. I was like, thank you. But like, and then he said, so you need to look at me for this. So because I was like, oh, thanks, mate. And he was like, don't touch me.
Yeah.
So I just did this.
What?
Just rubbed my hand on his face.
Oh, my God. You must have been drunk.
I was so drunk at that point. I didn't have a T-shirt on. Yeah. Oh. He grabbed me by my arm and just threw me out.
Yeah,
I would
advise against that as much. Man. I was advised shouting at people out the window.
Yeah, I was a different person back then. That was when I used to regularly get into fights in pubs for no reason whatsoever.
What the hell? You're one of the nicest guys I know.
I know. But I was a dickhead back then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. People don't like me now. You should have met me 10 years ago.
So anyway, these marshals arrest Roman, but this was a similar angle, I thought, to the Braun Strowman stuff. It's like this whole segment felt like a pale imitation of a Braun Strowman thing, because there was when was it? It was when Braun had that rampage. It was those trucks of $12 million episode,
yeah.
And they escorted Braun out of the arena, and they said, you know, it was like, don't touch me, and then the guy kept on touching him, and I believed that one, but this one I was like, mate, Reigns, you're being a bit of a dickhead.
It was, I mean, you say it's a pale imitation of Braun. I read it more as a pale imitation of Steve Austin.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
this was definitely them, like, we're going to try and make you the next Steve Austin. And that's never going to work. Like, yeah. Because Roman ain't no, he ain't no John Cena, and he ain't no Steve Austin either. No man.
So they have him handcuffed, though, and he beats them all up with the handcuffs on. There was a brutal moment where one of the guys was down, unprotected, and Reigns is just like hammering down his handcuffed fists on him. Like, that's a bit... he's meant to be the baby face.
Yeah.
I don't know, he's not really a badass either. He's just been a knobhead. And then... but, you know, this was an ingenious moment, I thought. Brock Lesnar's music hits. You kind of wasn't expecting it. The crowd went crazy. Brock Lesnar runs down, and Reigns had this brilliant moment. You know, and for an over baby face, this would have been terrific. But he looks down at his hands and they're handcuffed. He sees Brock Lesnar coming and he has this, like, oh crap,
I'm in
realization.
Trouble.
Yeah, and it was really well executed by everyone. Lesnar just destroys him. And those, like, I mean, I'm not obviously not a wrestler, but I imagine taking bumps and stuff.
Taking that F5 with those handcuffs on must have absolutely sucked. Like, when they actually took the handcuffs off, you could see that he was really badly bruised on his wrist.
Yeah.
What I really liked about this, though, and it's just the little touches that he does. Paul Heyman just standing at ringside holding the title belt above him, like he used to do for Punk. I just love that. What a great, like, advocate, just being like, by the way, this guy's the champion.
So the criticism this has had, even from the people who liked the segment, is that initially, Lesnar got the right reaction. The crowd were booing him for beating up a handcuffed Reigns. It's a dick move to do. But then Brock walked away, and he came back, and he beat up Reigns again and again. And then one more time, so a fourth time, when he pushed over Reigns on the stretcher. And it's like, well, by the third and fourth time, the crowd were like, one more time, and that's when the "you deserve it" chants came out.
Yeah,
and they were cheering Lesnar by that point.
It's the Braun Strowman thing, isn't it? You kind of like you train your audience to be like, well, if someone's walking away, you want to see them go back and do it again because that's something you can join in with, I suppose, is one way to look at it. But yeah, but I mean, my question when I was watching this, I was like, where's Seth?
Yeah,
where's Seth Rollins, mate? Like, he's meant to be your brother in arms. Like, why isn't he? Why isn't anyone coming out to help you? I mean, I had the same thing with the Daniel Bryan. Like, why? It's WWE had this thing where it's like, if someone's doing this vicious beatdowns, no one is allowed to go out and help. It feels a bit fake then.
And it's weird because the angle would be so much better in Bryan's example, because Roman's he's a big dog asshole. But Brian, all these people were saying how happy they are to see him back, and there he is getting beaten up. And it would make Owens and Zayn just, like, look like the worst people if everyone came. Like, imagine Baron Corbin, out-and-out heel. Imagine if he stood up to him and was like, what the hell are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then you're like, Oh man, they really are dicks.
I hope we get that next week. I really hope we get that sort of backstage stuff.
Do you remember the angle in the Attitude Era when the New Age Outlaws pushed Terry Funk and Mick Foley off the stage, and everyone came out and they were kind of like, "Oh man, this was too far." And it went like two segments.
Yeah,
ad break, come back. Everyone's still confused over what to do. That stuff's amazing.
Yeah, and I hope we get that next week, because like it always seems very weird when you don't do that sort of thing, when you do these vicious beatdowns and literally no one comes out to help them. But yeah, I thought this was a fine opening. I don't think it was a particularly killer angle. I don't think it wasn't as good as the stuff where Brock wasn't there and Roman was just like, why ain't he here? Like, because I thought Roman was better in those scenarios here, because I mean, as much as I'm a fan, quote unquote, of Roman Reigns, he really sucks as a babyface in peril.
Mm.
Like he's just not a babyface in peril.
He's a very, very good wrestler, in ring wrestler. He's got the completely wrong character.
Yeah,
and he's not very good at promos.
Yeah.
So and the other thing was it cuts to
you just said exactly what I said earlier.
Yeah,
Reigns isn't Cena. He's not Austin either.
Yeah. It was in my Raw review, you see.
Oh, okay.
So it was my line.
I should watch those.
and it cuts to the commentary desk, and they're all doing their like, oh my God, something bad's just happened voice, hushed tones. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so sorry you had to see this. Michael Cole hamming it up. And I'm like, Braun did worse.
Yeah.
Braun did worse like literally a month ago.
Flipped him over
this.
In an ambulance.
Yeah. So it's hard to get invested in that, in this brutal beatdown, when it's demonstrably not as brutal as stuff we've only seen a couple of weeks ago.
It's funny as well, because one of the lines that WWE like to do in their sort of hyperbolic state is just like, that's one of the most brutal beatdowns we've ever seen in Raw. It's one of the that's one of the most vicious attacks I've ever seen on Monday Night Raw, trying to really like put over this idea that it's so vicious. And then when they did the Mark Henry video package later on, they kept saying, he's one of the most dominant men we've ever seen. And I'm like, yeah, if you keep saying that about everyone, no one's a dominant force.
Well, and it destroys the credibility.
Yeah.
Because Michael Cole's sitting there saying, this is absolutely awful and devastating, and everyone can see that it's not. So it's like, well, you're the main play, you're the voice of WWE, you're the play-by-play announcer, you're the person I'm meant to trust, like we used to with Jim Ross when he says you better tune into the pay-per-view this weekend because that's where big stuff's going to happen. Pay your money, $9.99 for the network. And if that voice lacks credibility, then You can't buy into that. That's a real big problem with Michael Cole.
And I quote, "I apologize for what you're about to see." It's funny, I was just listening to Jericho's interview with Taz. He did a Taz.
I'm a bit of a Jericho binge.
You asked because I had like six episodes that I needed to get through. I was listening to his DC versus Marvel Mega War, which is quite an interesting one.
I've heard it. My friend listened to that, and he was like, "It becomes painfully obvious in a couple of minutes that he has a very rudimentary knowledge of DC or Marvel."
Jericho?
Yeah.
I think Jericho, he comes off better than that. Mm. Like, as he grew up reading DC comics, but at least that's his sort of own volition. There are a couple of times where he's like, they sort of talk about like movies and stuff or comic books, and he's like, oh, really? It's like, mate, I think that's pretty much common knowledge now. And he's like, oh, yeah, like the DC did the movies in the 70s. So it's like, oh, which one was that? Probably the Superman movie,
yes.
The quite popular one that was in the 70s, mate. But he was interviewed with Taz. Taz had this really interesting point when he was talking about color commentary. And he said that one of the lessons he learned from Vince was that you are the last voice people hear before they buy a show. Because for pay-per-views, it's always the announcers that are closing off Raw, and that's the last voice you're going to hear before you decide to buy the pay-per-view. And I don't think that really comes across with Michael Cole. He's very much he's just a voice. But he is not. He is the final voice you hear, but it's not the final voice that makes you want to do anything.
No, maybe punch the TV screen.
Yeah.
Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax had a video package next, recapping what happened the previous week, where Alexa finally revealed that she's been using Jax all this time. And this transitioned into Asuka versus Alexa Bliss, and Asuka beating Alexa Bliss, and Mickey James being so full on heel, she's even got this big buffont 80s hairdo quiff thing going on now.
Even heel hair now.
Heel hair and just a fantastic top. I thought.
Oh, Oliver Davis.
I thought she had a great top on. Hey, if I can perv over Seth Rollins, why is it then not okay for me to say Mickey James had a nice top on?
It was a nice top.
It was an aesthetically pleasing top. So, yeah, the Bliss worked the crowd here for a bit in the pre-match promo saying, she almost started to apologise for Nia Jax, but then she went, because I should have done it sooner.
That's my favourite heel type promo. It's like, I apologise for not doing it sooner.
And this, your hometown sucks as well.
Your baseball team isn't very good. Yeah. It was good. Pure heel stuff. It wasn't as good as her Elimination Chamber one when we all bought into her doing a babyface turn.
Yes, that was really good. Owens had the best cheap heat moment of the week, I thought, in his promo. It is true. Everyone is dumber in Texas. I got a nice
boot. Said it so nonchalantly.
Yeah, they're great. So this match was... Huh?
Yeah, it wasn't
Bliss
as good.
Versus Asuka.
It wasn't as good as when they had it a couple of weeks ago. Mm. Was it a couple of weeks ago?
I can't remember.
It was like a little while ago, but it wasn't as good as when they did it then.
But it wasn't really about the match. It was about the post-match angle. Alexa walks out. That's so she lost by DQ. And then Nia...
Count out.
Yeah, sorry, by count out. And then Nia runs down, bulldozes Mickey James and chases Bliss around the ring and then through the crowd. And that's the last we see of them.
There was a great moment on commentary during this match that really made me laugh when Corey Graves said that Alexa Bliss is the Regina George of WWE. And Jonathan Coachman just going like, oh, that's a reference no one understands. Mm. And Corey Graves goes, that's actually a great pop culture reference.
I don't get it.
Regina George was Mean Girls.
Oh,
she was the
right.
Head Mean Girl.
Oh, okay. I don't know her by name. No. That's good. That is...
You need to go to the Bitchalongs and at the Prince Charles.
I've been to a Bitchalong.
Have you?
Yeah,
great,
I took
they?
My lady partner and all her lady friends.
I remember
surprise,
you doing this. Yeah,
her surprise birthday thing last year, and yeah, got super into it.
Great fun.
Stop trying to make fetch happen.
She doesn't even go here.
It's a
my
great
favorite
yes,
line of the film.
Great movie.
Or two for you, Glen Coco. Good for you, Glen Coco.
What's the could you be any more gay thing as well? That's my favorite line.
Oh,
to the best friend.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember how it goes, though. So, after that, Alexa goes up to Kurt and says, you know, you should punish Nia. You should suspend her, too, like you did to Reigns. And Kurt says, nah, because I heard what you said last week. My daughter's heard. I don't know how many illegitimate ones he's adding to this. What you said last week.
How do we
week.
Know that Alexa isn't one of them?
Imagine the swerve. That Kurt is actually the father of all the WWE roster, bar one.
Yeah.
And it like that one
it's
is
Chad
the,
Gable.
Chad Gable, yes. So Kurt books Bliss versus Jax for WrestleMania.
Yes.
Next up, we had Braun Strowman versus Cesaro. Braun had a pre-match promo where he says he doesn't need a tag partner to beat the bar, but he will be getting one, it seems.
Yes.
So I think Elias, right?
Well, yeah, I think that's what everyone's pointing to. It's probably Elias. And a lot of people suggest this on Twitter. I really think it should be James Ellsworth.
Yeah.
I think Ellsworth would be such a great... Because he doesn't need him. And like he can throw him around as well. It'd be a really fun match.
I just... I want it to be that as well. My gut says it's going to be Elias, though, because it's the inferior option. But I just don't know how you make that work. I mean, I guess...
Kurt just announces it.
You turn Elias' face somehow. Yeah, Kurt's like, well, you haven't found one here. I've found Elias for you.
They could do the angle they did with... I mean, it's a bit late because you should have started this week, really. Mm. But the angle they did with, what's the last name, Lars Sullivan in NXT. I think he had this sort of gimmick for a while where he had a different tag team partner each week because it was someone who was trying to tame the monster.
Yeah, yeah.
But none of them ever worked because he was just beating them up as well. Mm. You could have done that with Braun, saying like, okay, Braun, we're going to try you out with this tag team partner this week just against Rhino and Heath Slater. And Braun beats up Rhino and Heath Slater, but then also beats up his tag team partner.
Yes.
That could have been quite fun.
That would have been really good. But like you said, you need to start that about 2 months ago, don't you?
Yeah.
Rather than 3 months out.
3 weeks out.
3 weeks out, yeah. Cesaro and Sheamus had a wonderfully delivered line where they're talking about how, you know, Braun Strowman, you're big and strong and everything, but you won't have any connection with your tag team partner. We eat together, we ride together, we sleep together. And then the whole crowd were like, "Way!" And I love that sort of...
It's very British.
Yeah, when the heels don't know what they've said, and then they get angry at everyone else being, oh no, screw you for thinking that. I thought that was a very well worked joke and brilliantly delivered by Cesaro. And I thought Cesaro had a very good match with Braun for the time they were given.
Yeah.
They had a nice moment where Cesaro and Sheamus both got up on the ring apron and then they both motioned to go in, but Sheamus bailed.
Yeah.
And said, I've got a bad leg or sort of bad neck or something. And Cesaro was like, dude,
we're meant to be friends.
Yeah. But yeah, I enjoyed this match.
Yeah, I enjoyed this as well. But yeah, Cesaro is... Oh, he's so good. Mm. He's an incredible talent, man. And Braun's really good in his role as well. Yeah, I enjoyed this. And you've said this to me yesterday. They could have a really great pay-per-view match.
It's hard to have a match against Strowman, I think, because he is kind of like Superman. And how do you make a match against Superman interesting?
Kryptonite.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah.
So... But because he's all so powerful and indestructible. But Cesaro, actually, even though he's nowhere near as big as Strowman, I bought it. I bought it as a match. I bought that Cesaro could outwit or maybe even outstrength Braun at some points. So, and yeah, it's like, this could be a good pay-per-view match for the Universal title.
Maybe.
Probably at Royal Rumble.
Next year, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, well.
Then we'll have to stop Roman's year-long reign, I guess. Mm.
Then we'd have, then we had some Ultimate Deletion preview stuff. Then The Revival beating Titus Worldwide in a blink and you'll miss it match.
I was going to say, I've only written one note, which is Revival win. I didn't even, a Shatter Machine, I'm guessing. But
yes, it was on Apollo Crews. But there was an announcement afterwards.
That they're going to be in the Battle Royal.
Mm, and this was the first time the Andre the Giant, so the men's Battle Royal, has been referenced. So
yeah, a couple of the guys were
kind of like the announcement.
Yeah, they also announced Baron Corbin and Ty Dillinger for it on SmackDown as well, and Becky, Naomi, and the Riot Squad for the women's Battle Royal.
Sure. The Revival said they'll be the first ever tag team to win the Battle Royal. So I thought, well, you're heels, so either that means you're not winning, or you're going to do a breakup angle.
Oh, I don't think they'll do. I shouldn't say that with such certainty. Because this is WWE, after all. But, we'll see.
But, that could be if they do win it and they put them over as a dominant tag team. I don't, you know, ship feels like it's sailed, though.
On The Revival? Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, injury-prone, big air quotes. They just gave up on them.
They just need a good superstar shake-up behind them.
Oh, put them on SmackDown, man, where there's actually a credible tag team division. That'd be...
But then, like, they'd just draft all the lowly tag teams or the ones that they've done nothing
with. Just those ones. Yeah. I'm on Balor Club over there as well. But, yeah, just those two will be fine.
Then we had a great Mark Henry Hall of Fame induction sort of announcement package. I know they put him over a bit too much.
I've seen a lot of people really down on Mark Henry going in.
Really?
Yeah, I've seen quite a few people being like, oh, what's he done? Like, what is... a lot of people are upset that he's in and The Undertaker isn't. Like, okay. It's that sort of sort of mentality about it. But, like, oh, man, I mean, I've had such a roller coaster time with Mark Henry because, like, when I was watching, like, when I was first getting into wrestling, it was Sexual Chocolate, and it was just like, ah, this is a silly comedy thing. It's giving birth to a hand. It's all this sort of nonsense. And then throughout, like, the 2000s, the sort of mid-2000s, it was like, oh, he's just a pointless tag team with MVP. Mm. And then there was that during the Nexus angle when he was slowly jogging and Nexus managed to outrun him. Like, he was chasing after them and they managed to overtake him and still get out. But then Hall of Pain, man. Hall of Pain. And all of a sudden, he became my favorite wrestler in the world. And
it took them 15 years.
But they finally got it. And all I wanted to see was Mark Henry every single week. Mm. And he was having the best pay-per-view matches. I loved his feud with The Big Show. You and I talked about it on Money in the Bank 2011 Patreon podcast. And I just fell in love with Mark Henry. And ever since then, I've just been like, man, what a guy.
Yeah.
And I look back now on the stuff where I was like, oh, I wasn't really that into him. It's just like... It was never really him. It was just the way he was booked. I always just assumed he sucked because that's what WWE kept telling me. Oh, by the way, we signed this guy to a 20-year deal and he sucks. We don't like him.
It's crazy that it was such a good promo.
Yeah.
And they never used it up until then. And that, like, the John Cena retirement speech is one of my all-time favourite
He better be wearing that salmon suit when he gets inducted.
Yeah. And then, like, it's a swerve. what he's saying, like, you think this is how I'm going to go out?
Yeah.
Yeah, really good.
Awesome.
And just, like, all the people he's helped. You hear the stories. You know, he's the guy that got Braun Strowman into wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy that went out and, you know, I was going to say Apollo Crews, but Rich Swann as well. That a lot of people feel very indebted to Mark Henry for his backstage work as well. And by all accounts, he wants to move into a more charitable endeavor where he kind of acts as an ambassador for WWE and he can help inner city projects. So he was legitimately one of the strongest men in the world at one point. He left in the early 2000s, only trained for 4 months for the World's Strongest Man competition and won it against everyone who was doing it full time.
Yeah.
He was freakily strong. What a guy.
What a guy.
Love Mark Henry.
Lance Storm, the old curmudgeon that he is, put up a great tweet yesterday that said that Mark Henry once offered to fly out to Calgary and open the door when my daughters were first bringing boys home.
Yeah.
What a great guy.
Great guy, all round. So then we had Absolution versus Sasha Banks and Bayley.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was the worst thing on the show.
Their
little pre-match promo.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Bayley. Yeah. It was very wooden. It was terrible dialogue, and it was badly delivered.
It's so weird, because you can actually see this in both of these teams. Mm. And one of these only learnt yesterday. But Bayley and Banks are legitimately best friends. Like Nia and Alexa in IRL are best friends. These two are... But like, you feel that Nia and Alexa are best friends. When they were doing their best friend stuff, you could feel like, oh, this is genuine. Mm. When Nia was getting upset, you could tell, like, oh, this is genuine, because she's drawing on all the emotions of Alexa being her best friend in IRL. Bayley and Banks are genuinely best friends, but they don't come across... They don't feel like best friends on TV. And then we were watching that Empowered documentary they've got on the network, and it turns out that Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose are also best friends and apparently are inseparable. And I turned to you, I paused the documentary, I was like, you can't tell that by watching them on TV, because they couldn't feel any more separate or apart from each other. So this is four people, and they're two sets of best friends, and none of them feel like they know each other.
I always blame it on the booking, and because Nia Jax and Bliss had some woeful segments earlier in the year based on their friendship. And it's down to the material they're given.
Yeah, it was storyline-wise, it didn't work.
Yeah.
Performance-wise, I thought it was fine.
Go back and watch those. No, they were real bad.
Were they really bad?
They were really bad.
Have I nostalgically... WWE made me think that they're good?
Probably. The Alexa Nia Jax stuff was terrible. It was Enzo who was the saving grace of all those bits.
Oh, yes, it was all those
Enzo
segments.
Enzo made them good.
Yeah, I did forget about those.
So Wonder Woman. So Sasha Banks had a Wonder Woman gear
on. She had a Royal Rumble gear.
I was like... This isn't a pay-per-view. What's going on? I thought that was a bit jarring. But they got the what treatment as well. Bayley explained her side, saying, you know, like, I know it's every woman out for herself, but I can't get Elimination Chamber out of my head. And the look in your face when you push me off that chamber, I think it's terrible.
Yeah.
And they lost. They lost.
Did they? Oh, yeah, they did.
Did they?
Sonya pushes Bayley into Banks. Yes, big kick. Absolution win. Yeah, sorry, I had to go through my notes.
So a little bit of a dissension there again.
Yeah.
Can't wait for that battle royal.
Yeah.
John Cena next up. He comes out.
Isn't it funny that I just assumed Absolution didn't win because they're not very good? Well, they're not pushed as being very good. I shouldn't say they're not very good. They're just pushed as not being very good.
John Cena next to talk about The Undertaker. And it's this happened a lot this week. The performances were so good that I kind of forgave the content being a bit weird. So Cena comes out and he talks about how much of a legend Taker is. There's a guy dressed in the crowd as Taker, and Cena points that out and everyone's chanting. The guy sort of ran to the front of the barricade.
Mm.
Probably, maybe I can... No.
Kevin Dunn wasn't ready for him.
Yeah. But then he goes like... But Taker hasn't replied to me.
Yeah.
Like, how dare he? And he goes on about how Taker's letting everyone down, how he's a coward. And it's so well delivered. I'm like, yeah, screw you, Taker. But then if you take a second to think about it, you're like, no, screw you, John. Poor old Taker has given so much to the business. The guy's given a hip as of last year to the business. And you're saying all this stuff to make him come out. But
I did like his do something section where he was like, throw some lightning, hit some music, do something. Like, and he even got the crowd to chant, do something.
Pretty vague.
Yeah. I thought it was quite nice. I thought it was a great promo from John. He starts calling Taker a coward. And then like Cena's like literally pleading with Taker to do something. But we didn't get The Undertaker, did we?
No, we got Kane, which I do not mind in the slightest.
This is much better usage of Kane, yeah.
Yeah, and it wouldn't it have been really nice if Kane faded away after TLC, and then this is the first time we're seeing him after then.
Yeah.
That would be really cool, but I think everyone's a bit like over Kane because he's been inserted in all these high-level feuds. But this works so well thematically, and it draws out The Undertaker returning for just that little bit longer. I now want him saved for Go Home, for the Go Home show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it was kind of cause like he chokeslammed Cena, and they got one of the commentators then said, was that Kane saying yes, or was it Kane stepping up? And I suddenly wrote, oh no, we're not getting Cena versus Kane at Mania, are we?
The same thing, yeah.
God, that would be disappointing.
Yeah. Did you read that? Because that is literally what... God, that would be disappointing. Have we synced up in note-taking?
No, yeah. It's about time we did.
Yeah, so Cena versus Kane has been announced for next week's Raw. It's going to be a corker, I'm sure. Yeah. But it's a nice way to further the Taker storyline without Taker being there.
Yeah.
Then we had Balor Club beating the Miz to Raj. Miz cut a promo beforehand how he's angry about being he's soon to be the longest running Intercontinental Champion, but he's not even on the WrestleMania magazine. And every time Miz said a point like that, Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel would go, no respect!
Yeah.
Which was a nice gimmick. And then he also called Seth Rollins and Finn Balor Tyler Black and Prince Nevitt.
I was going to say, he did say Prince Nevitt, didn't he?
Which is a mistake. He was Prince Devitt. Yes.
And it was funny because I think then Cole was going to say, who's going to follow that up with, when Balor came out, he literally was like, and here is Prince. And it was almost like he didn't know whether it was Nevitt or Devitt, so just stopped.
Just mumble. Here is Prince. It's the It Prince. The world famous It Prince.
I was going to say, I think you're fine. They're actually the world famous Yep Kicks. Anyway.
The crowd didn't know who they were. Of course, those Tyler Black and Prince Devitt, Finn Balor and Seth Rollins is former pre-WWE names.
Yeah.
But the crowd were kind of dead for it.
Yeah,
which makes sense.
Didn't really pop for that. Yeah, absolutely.
But I liked it. I thought it was a good line.
And then Gail Anderson interrupted and I was like, oh, no, it's the Balor Club. And just as amazing because we were literally having the conversation last week. Are Balor Club still a thing? Yep, turns out they are.
They've even got new t-shirts.
Yeah,
OGBC. Yeah. So that means original Balor Club.
Yeah.
In wrong speak. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So they all had a 6-man tag. Seth Rollins was on commentary. And there was a nice moment when the Finn Balor made his entrance. And then Seth Rollins' music hit. And it was for him to come out on commentary. I really like what they're doing with them too. Fine match. Went a bit long, I thought.
Yeah, it's third hour stuff. It was, crowd weren't really into it. And it was fine though.
And Balor rolled up Miz for the win.
I don't think Gallo's tagged in.
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't paying attention that much. And the Miz to Raj beat down Balor, the whole Balor Club, but specifically Balor at the end. But they were going to go for a triple powerbomb, of course, the Shield's old spot. And that's when Rollins ran down for the save.
Mm-hmm.
And he beat up Seth, and he had a face-off with Balor. Like, huh. Now who owes who one?
Now who's smiling?
Yes. That's all very good stuff. I'm enjoying that feud very much so.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, it's better than the United States Championship triple threat.
Yes. And then the final bit we're going to speak about, because, of course, we watched we reviewed the Ultimate Deletion yesterday. God, if we reviewed Ultimate Deletion in this episode as well.
It'd have been a mammoth episode.
Close to 2 hours.
Yeah.
So it's a Ronda Rousey training montage, which was excellent.
It was excellent, yes. Wasn't it? It was really good. Rousey came off really great. Kurt was really good in it as well. I just thought this was great. Although, I mean, I suppose she was there because she was advertised to be there. They advertised that she's now going to be on the next 3 episodes of Raw. She's going to be next week on the go-home show in Atlanta, I think. But I was like, oh, they just done a video package. Was she not there again? Turns out she was there for the live crowd because the live crowd didn't actually get to see Ultimate Deletion, which was interesting. Mm. Interesting to say the least.
I understand why, because if anything, they've learnt from their mistakes. Putting those that it's not enjoyable for the live crowd to sit and watch a Titantron,
especially when it's the main event.
Yeah.
So I it makes sense to put them to put out Braun putting people through tables. Mm. And then Ronda Rousey to do an in-ring segment with Dana Brooke. So, yeah, it does make sense. But I thought this was a really great video package. Mm.
Yeah, they showed her dominating in the UFC and when she was in the Olympics and how she was sad at her last match in the UFC.
Didn't mention she lost.
Yeah. And
Skip over that bit.
She said some naughty words as well, which they bleeped out. And the thing I liked the most about it was Kurt just sitting by her side and treating it felt like a legitimate sport.
Yeah.
Like these two people were actually training to win a match that's coming up.
But you can tell that Triple H is involved in this angle because Triple H loves doing these sorts of vignettes where it does feels a bit more UFC-like than it does anything else. Well, it feels more UFC than it does WWE. Kurt Angle's shorts were very short.
Oh, they were short.
They were short shorts. Yes. I mean, I'm a man who only wears 3/4 lengths, but these were short shorts.
These were 1/8 lengths.
Yeah. But should we talk about the Ronda Rousey Dana Brooke?
Yes, let's
segment?
Do it.
So you
go ahead.
So if I remember correctly, Ronda comes out to cut a promo. Essentially, she's glad handing, high fiving absolutely everyone
the
around.
Outside area of the ring,
loving that.
She's got eyeshadow on as well, which is like yellow one half and then pink for the rest. And I guess it's kind of, or maybe it was red, kind of like Ronda Rousey's color, Rowdy Roddy Piper's colors, right. Red and yellow. That's
there,
what I was trying to
got
say.
Got there in the end, and then she gets into the ring. She goes to cut a promo. Who should interrupt but Dana Brooke's music? And Dana Brooke costume change from her Titus Worldwide. I think they're two separate characters now. I think statistician Dana Brooke and Dana Brooke are two separate entities in WWE because the two never cross over. There's never really any mention of her being a statistician when she's in this role over here.
It's Joseph Park and Abyss from TNA.
They've just both got the same name. And she comes out. Did she cut a promo? Did she say anything?
Yeah, she said, you don't deserve to be here, yada, 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 generic stuff.
I'm a heel despite being a babyface in my other role.
And then she threw a punch at sort of about half speed.
Less
came
than that,
in like
mate.
This.
And then Rousey, at an even slower speed, stopped it.
Blocked it, with this sort of upstretched fist or hand.
Yeah.
And then they looked at each other. And then
time stood still.
Yeah, and the crowd were kind of like, huh.
I think that was a moment like in the script, crowd pops.
Yes.
But the crowd didn't pop because
it was awful.
It was pretty pants.
But they stood there, and then Dana Brooke kind of awkwardly transitioned herself into Ronda's guru throw thing.
Yeah.
But to her credit, that throw, the one that she did on Stephanie McMahon, looks brutal.
Oh man,
she threw her across the ring.
She threw her pretty much into the third row. It was incredible.
So that was good. But the rest of it, and Ronda Rousey started to cut a promo. She got about 2 words in, and it was interrupted by Brooke's music. That was pants. Like her promo was no good. Even for those 2 words. How did she grab 2 words?
Oh man.
But they're doing it right, I think. They're giving her that live crowd exposure, but not to the larger TV audience. They're just keeping those training montages.
And I think we sort of had this discussion yesterday, but not fully. It was one of the more watched videos on YouTube, right?
Yes, it was over 1 million, I think.
Yeah, and what do they usually average, those segments?
Oh, it depends who's in it, but, anywhere from between 100,000 to 500,000, 600,000.
Yeah, so that's a good sign at the very least.
Yeah.
There is some interest in her. It's just sometimes it doesn't work.
And, of course, there was Ultimate Deletion, which you can check out our video of yesterday. Who do you think won this week?
Who do I think won this week?
Come on.
SmackDown.
Yes.
I was going to say, it's not really even a question, to be honest, is it? Like, as much as I thought, I got crucified for it yesterday. I thought Ultimate Deletion was fine. It was the best thing on the show. But I thought everything on SmackDown was basically brilliant.
Yeah. The Daniel Bryan comeback story alone and seeing him fire up again would have beaten the vast majority of everything.
Yeah, pretty much. What a great week for SmackDown. What a great week for wrestling.
For wrestling.
Bryan, for wrestling in general.
And more specifically targeted to the, I don't want to say internet fans, because everyone has the internet. It's kind of a redundant phrase now. But fans of our ilk who enjoy, well, maybe not you, enjoy Woken Matt Hardy and that crazy aside, and I imagine there's the Venn diagram is a huge crossover with the Daniel Bryan fans and people who got behind them. So in the same week, we got Daniel Bryan returning and Woken Matt Hardy getting to have a main event segment on Raw and go absolutely mental.
In clearly a segment that was just him and, yeah, you know, him and Matt, him and Bray, and, you know, presumably Jeremy Borash, just them working together. It wasn't a WWE writers thing. It was a Matt Hardy creation, and we got to see it on Monday Night Raw in the main event. It was pretty much designed for YouTube commenters.
Yes. And that's not where the wrestling fun ends, folks, because this Friday, podcast listeners, you'll have to go over to the YouTube channel for this, is one of our new signees, Joe Hendry, the prestigious one, or as I always think of him in my head, local hero, Joe Hendry. He is going to have his musical debut on Wrestle Talk. He's written us a nice song. I'm sure it's going to be very complimentary. We haven't seen it yet. We've seen a brief clip or two. But yes, that's on Friday. Make sure you tune in for that.
It is coming there. I'm a big fan of Joe Hendry. I'm looking forward to hearing it. Do you want to throw out some iTunes reviews and then we'll let these fine folk get on the rest of their day and listen to another podcast?
I'm going to throw some stuff out. And the podcast they're listening to better also be our podcast last weekend.
No, they can go off and listen to something else.
No, I get insanely jealous. Coffee for Blood writes, a consistently great podcast. We're not about the quality, we're about the quantity.
Consistency.
Support Wrestle Talk. Honestly, one of the best podcasts I listen to.
Much better. One of the best. Yes. That's the best way to put it.
I like Luke and Ollie regular banter, and they do an excellent job explaining and breaking down the different segments of Raw and SmackDown, that even if you miss a show, you can still catch up with this podcast. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Coffee for Blood.
What a horrible username. Maybe you must drink a lot of coffee. And the man they call Chris.
His real name is Evan.
Making them tap, he writes. Hey guys, relatively new to the show, but I really enjoy the back and forth, as well as the real life conversations about wrestling. As a true hardcore fan of wrestling, as the art, I appreciate you guys having that same point of view of not only WWE, but New Japan and NXT as well. Thank you guys, and keep up the good work.
Well, cheers, Chris, even that is your real
name. Thank you, the man they call Chris. Yeah, that's all we've got time for today, but we are recording two episodes tomorrow, one which will go up on Monday. It's a lot of people's favourite thing we do here. It's Fantasy Booking Warfare.
It's back again. Yes. So we are doing...
It's a monthly thing.
Yes. I don't know if we said it in this episode.
Oh, no,
we didn't, because it's in the Patreon bit, but that's not in the podcast.
Ah, why not?
Well, they don't want to hear just people saying names and then just hear a boink. Like, that's not,
they do.
That's not audio friendly. That's visual. So that.
But that's what the podcast Patreon. What about if you're just a pod swafter?
Then let me know and I'll put them back in. But yes. I just assume that people wouldn't want to hear that bit. So I always excise that bit from the recording, at least the podcast version. But our topic is a new Ministry of Darkness with Aleister Black, one of my current faves. So I am very much looking forward to that.
The trash talking has already begun in the studio. I came in today and I was like, oh, I've got a few great spots. That's what I'm getting into these days. I like making big spots and then coming up with a story to satisfy those spots.
Well, I was going to say, I've got a start, I've got to find a middle.
You've got an end?
No.
Oh God, so you... That's the worst way to be. You can't book forward. You book from the end backwards.
No, but I've got a start that I really want to use. So I have to go with that.
Oh, but then like, what happens if you get to the end and you're like, oh man, the end's rubbish, but I'm so attached to this start. That's a bad way to go about things.
Well, maybe we'll see.
It'll all transpire on Monday.
Yes, yeah, so we'll see how it all goes. But until then, I love you. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.